SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. The first order of business, clearly, before getting into the weekend previewing, we've got all of the obvious corona-related news, and the not cancellations yet, and cancellations clearly a concern, but the conditions right now are generally that most ovals are going to allow racing to continue without patron attendance. And in some cases, it seems not even connection attendance. The situation that is potentially could change it literally in a minute. If one jockey gets sick in any jock's room, much the same way the NBA situation has. And, you know, the other, obviously all the other, you know, sports leagues, baseball, hockey, et cetera, you know, all moving to more than limited exposure, essentially, and potential for exposures. The unique part of racing situation is that we've got the mechanism to assuming everybody can stay healthy, they can run the way they did in Hong Kong and the way we've seen as an example, and with no other sports going on, it's you know, not to try to capitalize on the situation, but if nobody's got anything else to watch or gamble on, it kind of makes a unique scenario for the sport. We'll see. We'll see how long the venues that are going to run are going to be able to maintain this schematic. You know, because obviously, the backstretch community, you know, you've got dormitories where, you know, the backstretch help is you know, congregating and living, et cetera, and in close quarters. So those are the conditions that make for the spread of this. And I think if word comes that anybody gets sick, you have to pull up. And we'll just hope for the best. The places that have made the decisions, we understand Philadelphia is not going to run. That part was the only one that I've heard that isn't running. Everybody else is running with limited patron availability. And that last night. Oaklawn, with a late decision, at first said that they were going to go ahead, and then by about, I don't know, 9 o'clock, word came that that they were going to run without attendance. Curiously, in both cases, it seems, in Philly and Hot Springs, the casinos are staying open, which makes absolutely next to no sense. I that part is a little odd. I mean, the whole point here is groups of people in a, you know, in an enclosed quarters. I mean, most states' health departments are limiting, suggesting that gatherings of, you know, no more than 250, no more than 500, et cetera. And, you know, with racing, one thing that's regarding patron attendance, places where they can be outdoors, where people can, you know, separate. I mean, that isn't that a, you know, wouldn't that be a better scenario? You know, I close the clubhouse and the grandstand, but people, you know, as long as, right, it's all proximity. This is a thing that's passed with close contact. So, anyway, Keeneland saying the first 2 weeks of their meet, they've canceled the April sale. Things going ahead at OBS. Everybody's already in place, and it already, you know, it already gotten to Ocala, and so they'll continue and hope for the best on that front. And the rest of it, you'll play, you know, where the ball lies, essentially. That's all. I mean, the whole scenario as it's playing out is just amazing. I'm hearing that, you know, tonight at Fairgrounds, they've got a night racing, you know, the Twilight Racing concept, and they've got a, you know, post racing, you know, band outside and all that, and the tents. All right. Dubai World Cup, they're going to run without patron. Some tough decisions being made. I heard yesterday from Derek Lawson, who is, you know, with Flavian Pratt. They're torn about flying. There's some very difficult. Situations that have arisen. We understand Umberto Rispoli went back to Italy and is, I suppose, is now going to be stranded there for a while. And Hammer will tell us about the Louis Contreras situation too. He traveled with his wife I'll let Hammer explain that. Jeff Taylor is going to join Hammer as well, and we'll talk about the Rebel card and the Essex and the rest of the Oaklawn card. The racing at Turfway is just unbelievable. They're gonna run without patrons, and it's really too bad because here's their biggest day, and they put a card on that is absolutely spectacular. There is only stakes races, allowances, and maiden special weights. And I can tell you that even in the heyday of Turfway, when you know, Turfway as a venue was, you know, a B plus, it was always, you know, a B track, as a B plus track even, I don't ever remember printing out the entire card, but I printed out the entire card. It's out of this world. And you know, the maiden races haven't done all the pedigree work on the maidens, but we'll talk to Mike Battaglia in this hour and get some thoughts from Mike. The Jeff Ruby is really fun. If you haven't looked at the, you know, the rest of it, the Kentucky Cup came up really competitive. The Bourbon at Oaks, the Rushaway is engaging. It's a dynamite day of racing. Jay Privman starts hour two. We'll do some Derby Watch conversation. We'll do the Santa Anita discussion with him because Jeff Siegel is supposed to be covering Pac-10. And I don't know why that was one conference. I didn't hear about what they were doing with their conference championship. I mean, with the NCAAs canceled, I don't even know why any of the, I don't know if any other, what other decisions were made among the, you know, the college conferences. I was joking. A couple of people joked with me on the phone yesterday. Tina and I probably saw maybe the last college basketball game anywhere, the Colgate BU game on Wednesday night. Jordan Burns with the last basket of 2020. We'll talk to Jay about the Beholder Mile, as well as the very important allowance race, Charlatan, and a couple of prime foes. Nick Tamerow will do some of the recapping from last week, as well as look ahead to the cross country pick five. It's a maiden special weight from Aqueduct in the ninth on Saturday. Then it goes to the Bourbonette Oaks, the Rebel, the Jeff Ruby, and then back to Oaklawn for a maiden special weight. So the 10th and 11th from Oaklawn, 10th and 11th from Turfway, and the 9th from Aqueduct for your cross-country pick five. We'll check in with Ed and with James, and probably one more visit. Let's actually head to the break and get going, because we got lots to do. There's a couple of pieces of news aside from the attendance decisions around the racetracks. There was a very good piece of news yesterday, and that is that the equine fatality rate, as measured and as accumulated by the equine injury database, for 2019, after all the carrying on and the attacks and the smears and the recriminations from outside interests, the industry recorded its lowest fatality rate since they started keeping specific cumulative figures. Let me repeat that. The lowest number of fatalities since the equine injury database was formed in 2009, Dr. Mary Scalay. And frankly, what that does, as opposed to the idiotic and the just ridiculous amounts of misinformation and, you know, the coverage that you know talks about epidemic. Yes, it's an epidemic of safety. That's what it's an epidemic of everybody working on these goals and having results. You're not going to stop the spates of injury and fatality. That should be obvious. It's obvious to everybody internally. And we've referred back several times to, you know, the situation that happened at Aqueduct in 12 and Del Mar in 16. There's going to be sets of conditions that just, you know, exploit weaknesses in the environs in which the sport is conducted. But the work that's been going on for over a decade that has brought down fatalities by close to 25%. Next week, we'll get Dr. Parkin, the epidemiologist, and I've been wanting to talk to him anyway, but it's really encouraging, and everybody that contributes to it, that works on it, and has been getting beaten up, should feel proud of what this represents in terms of accomplishment. We'll take a break here. We'll get started. We'll go out to Hot Springs. Rick Hammerly and chart caller and clocker type Jeff Taylor with some opinions. Looking forward to Rebel Day there tomorrow. Back after this, weekend preview at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred racing at Sam Houston continues through March 28th with the March 21st Texas Champions Day on the horizon. The best Texas breds in the state or anywhere come together, over $500,000 in purse money. Tuesday afternoon racing starts on March 10th. The 12% takeout on all multi-leg wagers has made SHRP the most popular destination for horse players this winter. SHRP.com, Sam Houston Race Park. Follow Sam Houston on Twitter as well, SHRP.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Since I haven't talked to you, I dream about your baby blues and wonder why you stopped getting high. Even though we were just friends, I think of us as bookends and I.
We're back in the races, about coming up to 20 minutes into hour one, and out to Hot Springs we go. And I didn't get a chance, given the number of updates associated with the attendance decisions, I did want to mention, and Hammer's the perfect time to do it, yesterday at Oaklawn, for those that had a chance to watch some racing and get involved, the feature yesterday... Steve Asmussen for Mrs. Moulton, a Curlin filly by the name of Fire Coral, and she's 2-for-2 as a 3-year-old. She's out of a prominent family, Coral's son, the AP Indy mare. She was unraced, but she happened to be a half of Southern Image, the stallion and big cap winner, Malibu winner too, and this is a nice family. This is a sister, Fire Coral, of Champagne Problems. She has gone a mile and a 16th now twice, breaks her maiden, and now comes back with an allowance and is ratcheting up on the figure scale. And I thought won really well yesterday, and it was widening down the stretch. It's got a very racy-looking body that she's going to continue to stretch out. I would put Fire Coral on your radar screen. Probably get, you know, a shot at an Oaks berth in her next start, and I was impressed. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's everything? I was, as we talked last night a little bit about the goings-on, I was trying to come up with something to say first off the bat, and guess what? Here's what I got. Welcome to the first day of the rest of our lives. We've heard that saying since we've been in elementary school, and I can't think of a more appropriate time to apply it. It's a new world for everybody, and not just in the horse racing world, the sports world. It's a new world out there, you know, especially here in the United States and America, and you know, after everybody has to reevaluate, I just want to you know, tell everybody to be positive and to time to there's no time to look back and say what if, and I wish, you know, somebody would have done this or we'd have done that. We need to all look forward, ahead, take care of ourselves, take care of our families, be vigilant in how we go about our daily lives here for a while. And I'm actually very happy to see the sports world fall in line, the racing world and the rest of us, you know, basketball, football, hockey, do the right thing. Shut down. It's time. I don't know how many of you saw a little video of I think it was the Prime Minister of Italy or one of his cabinet was on Twitter about a week ago, and he was very adamant. He said, do not do what we did. We thought we could just, you know, be tough and beat this thing. It's do the right thing. You know, stay inside, you know, wash your hands, do all the little things, and don't do what we did. And it really caught me, and I think that's what we need to do. Just stay positive, look ahead, and we will get by it. And I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad racing has fallen in line with the rest of the sports world and you know, curtailed the attendance. I mean, we would have had Oakland here, probably would have had 30,000, 35,000 people here on Saturday, and it doesn't matter. They've done the right thing and had the people we're going to go ahead through the weekend without spectators, as are most racing venues, and I think it's the right thing to do. I know what we've said here, what the statement says, is through the weekend, and then we'll evaluate after that. But you know, on a brighter note or a something note, I mean, when you think about it, right now you got racing, you have NASCAR, you have horse racing out there. They're going to be maybe some of the only live sports to entertain people. They're going to be looking, so it's a good time for us to put on a good show. And anyway, we hope to do that here the next 3 days here at Oaklawn and moving forward. So that's my intro.
Yeah, good one. And I don't know what else, you know, you can only, you know, react as – you know, as the situation dictates. Yesterday, you know, we were waiting for a couple of, you know, other decisions, and you know, Churchill has got time, obviously, to monitor things before they, you know, have to do anything about Derby. And at the same time, they're also, you know, going to clearly be affected by what transpires over the next, you know, 4 weeks. I'm speculating, Rick, that, you know, the jocks room is the place that is the biggest concern, right? That, you know, obviously the horses and the staves at the barns, they're, you know, fairly segregated and out somewhat in the open. It's the closed quarters that apparently is the key issue. And I just think that, you know, you can go for as long as you can, assuming nobody, you know, in a jocks room gets sick. That seems to be the, you know, the moment that you're going to have a problem.
Well, we'll leave that to the health experts and go from there as far as that goes. But we're going to experience today the first day without fans in the grandstand.
Yeah.
So we're in uncharted territory, like I said, I hope we, meaning the racing community, put down a good show for the public, because I think we'll have a few more eyes than normal, because there's not a whole lot else out there to watch, unless, you know, there's gonna be a lot of replays. We're gonna be watching a lot of Super Bowls, a lot of NBA Finals, or Miracle on Ice, you might see 10 or 15 times. So, like I said, it takes this as a positive time and spend time with your family and enjoy the replays. Enjoy it. Get a book. Do what you got to do. But we can beat this thing, and then we're going to, and we'll come back stronger on the other side. But let's talk about racing. I sparingly, I don't want to bring on our expert here, Jeff Taylor, on too often, because, you know, everybody gets spoiled. But we remember we had Jeff on opening weekend, and he gave the rundown of the track, and I think what he said has played out pretty well as far as, you know, the biases go, meaning there really aren't any. And, he's been here for a long time, and we'll get him on here shortly to give out some of his selections. And I know he gave out a few last time he was on, but we're real happy with the card that for Saturday. Always people in my position are never happy to the 100% extent, probably four or five horses away from a super card. But, you know, there's some stuff going on, and maybe there's a couple reasons why we didn't get a few more horses, and that's, we could talk about that later. But three stakes, the Essex, which is the final prep for the Oakland Handicap, the Azari, which is the final prep for the Apple Blossom, and then, of course, the Rebel, which is the final prep for the Arkansas Derby coming up. And, at first glance, you look at the Rebel and you go, yeah, it's all right. But I tell you what, when you start looking at picking apart this field, it's a pretty interesting race. You've got all kinds of stuff going on here. A lot of firsts, a lot of horses trying things for the first time. And this is a pretty strong field, and I'll let Jeff break it down a little bit later. But the Zeri, once again, the first five finishers from the Houston race are here. And I hope they finish within a length of each other, and I'll come back again next month, along with, Go Google Yourself and a couple others for the Apple Blossom. And the Essex turned out to be an all-Oakland affair. All the horses in that race are all stables here. So, there was some concerns about shipping at that time, who knows, but we got a seven pack here of local horses that'll put on a good show, and a various assortment of allowance and maiden races to fill out the card. So I think if you want to get Jeff, and you guys can talk about what looks good out there on the track and at the windows.
Sounds good.
Good morning, Steve.
Jeff, how are you? How you been? How's the meet gone?
It's going to be a heck of a weekend here, and as Hammer alluded to, maybe we'll be a welcome diversion in all this, because, the racing product really, really is exciting. Traditionally, this is our second biggest day next to our Derby next month, but the card came up fantastic. And not only just the three stakes that Hammer alluded to, but the undercard, I think, is extremely bettable and interesting as well.
Well, let's hit on the stakes, and of course, two of these are going to be one stake and one maiden race. The maiden 11th are going to be part of the cross country, and so I do want to talk to you. I don't want to let that 11th go undiscussed because it's very competitive. I mean, there's five fillies in there that are have already run and have run, you know, real races. I mean, that Nightcap, which is the anchor for you and the anchor for the cross country, is a very important race tomorrow. Let's start though with the sequence and the late pick four, which is the three stakes and that 12th, the 11th. Let's get into that with the Essex. And, you know, you got some horses that seem like they're in form, Jeff, and then you got, as Hammer mentioned, you got all horses that have already competed at the meet, and so that makes for an interesting mix, including the ones coming out of the Razorback or the fifth season.
Yeah, it is. It is a very interesting group, and these are some kind of some of our veterans that we've seen through the last couple of years here. Again, no shippers simplifies matters a bit, I suppose. But as we all know, sometimes it's a little bit dangerous to try to look forward, if you will, to some of these performances. That's what's going to happen. I always start with the high weight in a handicap. It's a rarity these days, I think, unfortunately, the handicap going the way of the dinosaur. But the 219-pound high weight Bankin and Pioneer Spirit, I laid them 1-2 in the line, and I think that's what the public is going to do as well. Both of them slated to carry 19, as I mentioned. Bankin, a great effort in the Razorback, just not quite good enough to run down Warrior's Charge, who I was most impressed with, Steve. I thought the horse rebroke a bit at the eighth pole when Bankett got to him, and he finished up like a good horse should. And I think we're going to see a lot more of Warrior's Charge, hopefully beginning with the Oakland Cat next month. But Bankett, again, a little bit buzzard luck for him. He just missed as well to Pioneer Spirit with this season. Now you start to question maybe his ability to win. He's only posted a couple of victories in the last 2 years, and that's troublesome for me from maybe a win player standpoint. If they get that close, you usually like to see him punch through at least half the time, and he has simply not done so. He could be a bit of a vulnerable favorite in my mind at 5-2. Pioneer Spirit, who's at 3-1 in the line, he didn't run his race in the Razorback. Not quite sure why. He almost always showed up. He had a three-race win streak snap that day. But I think he's going to be the controlling speed in the Essex. And when he did make the lead to Warrior's Charge, he kind of lost interest, I felt like. Still ran a decent number. Got beat 4.5, I know. But I think if he gets loose up front, I really couldn't find a whole lot in there to run with him in the early stages. So I think he is most definitely a wire-to-wire threat. A horse that intrigues me in there at 4-1 is Night Op. An indifferent third, if you will, in the fifth season on opening weekend. He came back with a nice confidence booster last time. Beat a decent group of optional horses. The big thing I like about Night Ops may be the track condition. He's a perfect 3-for-3 in the money in the mud, earned his highest buyer number in the mud, and if there's maybe some outside value, maybe at 4-1, 9-2, I think it could be Night Ops.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the potential for the wet weather. What's the latest on that front?
Well, it looks like we got a big rain event coming, Steve, and I know they've been crying wolf here the last couple of weeks with the major rain that they forecast really not materialize, unfortunately, but it doesn't look like we're going to avoid it this time. Rain most of the day today, it looks like, as well as into tonight, so I think players can prepare for an off racetrack tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the continuity element, and 100% today, 90% into tomorrow, so it does look it doesn't appear that you're even going to get any extended period where the track gets a chance to dry. All right, so let's keep that in mind. And I do agree that Pioneer Spirit and Davey Cohen, you know, seem to have things their own way up on the front end. I suppose Snapper Sinclair, maybe Rosario can try to motivate him to stay fairly close. I suppose Bravazo maybe could be ridden ridden from the gate. I don't know. It doesn't. It really does feel like, if you ran this 100 times, Pioneer Spirit, seems very tough to deal with.
Let's talk about break from outside. Yeah, I think he's off and gone basically.
Exactly. All right. Let's take a look at the girls' race, and this is nice. This is a fun group.
It is, and it was most intriguing. I thought the Houston race came up. Is the strongest addition down there ever of that race, and it does have some history to it. And good for Sam Houston. They've gotten some purse money now. The Texas legislature finally gave them a little bit of a break, and they certainly put it to good use. Houston having a little bit of a renaissance meet down there, and I think it summed up perfectly with the Ladies Classic. It came up super good, and this is basically take two. The first five, as Hammer mentioned, coming right back in this spot, and it is an intriguing race. I think you could maybe make a couple of cases for a couple of different horses, different type of pace scenarios in here. I don't really think there's as far as who's going to make the lead. It's who's going to take up the chase. Serengeti Empress, I think it all starts with her. She is just pure hickory. I mean, she used to be, I thought, either hot or cold. She either showed up or she didn't, but she's obviously disproved that theory in their last two starts, a very courageous third in the Distaff last year, the Breeders' Cup race, when she did go pretty fast early, and she just didn't throw the towel in, and neither did she in a good second-place performance in Houston. Lady Apple finally wore her down at 3-5, but I think you'll see her go again. Amos has made no bones about his style with her. She's going to go as hard as she can, as long as she can up front, and it's going to be up to the rest of the field to kind of chase her down. All Emma. From the outside, comes off a sprint effort where she showed some pretty good speed. She could make things difficult for Serengeti, but she's faced tougher pace scenarios previously, has Empress, and she's prevailed. And I think she is, again, going to be pretty tough. And, again, we don't know how the racetrack's going to play out. He got a good seal on it, track superintendent Kevin Seymour, last night before some rain came through the area. I just came from upstairs. The clockers are going good with the racetrack this morning. It is pretty firm. They're getting over it real well. Now, after a day of rain today and they chew it up, who knows? But I know Kevin well, and he's going to stay on this thing all night long. We'll see the first couple of races. By this time of the card, we'll kind of get an angle about how the racetrack is playing. But if it's neutral, as it usually is, or maybe leaning towards speed, Serengeti, in my mind, is going to be awful tough to kick down.
Yeah, agreed. The one question, she's never dealt with a wet track, but there's really nothing that says that it would be a problem for her either, out of a Bernardini mare and by alternation.
She's got a 400 mud number. Yeah, I don't think that's going to be an issue at all.
No. One element when it comes to conversation about horses that fare okay on a wet track, it isn't sometimes with them the footing. A lot of the times it's the kickback, and when they start getting splashed in the face and they turn their head, you know, they're handling the footing all right. It's the unpleasantness that they're dealing with that throws them off. But, you know, a horse like Serengeti, who's not going to have anybody in front of her, she just skips over it. Let's skip over to the Rebel. And speaking of Tom Amos, Amos brings the undefeated and open length romper, No Parole, and Son of Violence for Maggie Moss and Greg Tremonton has been really exciting at Fairgrounds and Delta, and this is going to be the acid test. In the meantime, the West Coast Invaders bookend this field, Nadal and American Theorem. Then there's the locals like Basin and Silver Prospector and Three Technique, who was running late in the Smarty Jones. A lot to digest in this edition of the Million Dollar Rebel.
Yeah, it all starts with pace again, and I wrote a little analysis, if you will, or it's going to go up on the website for the Oakland Anywhere wagering platform here. I think No Parole, I'm glad you led off with him, because I think he's actually the key to the race. I mean, if Nadal gets loose and skips out there from the rail, we may be seeing another off and gone. It would be, to me, a little remarkable to think we could have three wire-to-wire winners in the stakes action tomorrow, but I could certainly see it happening if No Parole does not pressure Nadal early. I don't think he's as quick as Nadal, but he could make life a little bit hard for him. I may be selling him a little bit short. I laid No Parole at 8-1 in the morning line. It's definitely going to be a culture shock regarding class. He's never been outside the realm of State Bred Company down in Louisiana. He is quick enough, I think, to again be right at Nadal. I don't think another 43.5 mile though was going to be to either one of those benefit, and I don't think Nadal's going to be that fast. But the post position drill speed we often talk about, and I usually, much like track bias, don't give it a second thought. But in Nadal's case tomorrow, especially with an off racetrack, it's almost going to compel Rosario to go early. And how keen Nadal is into the first turn, I think, will go a long way in determining the outcome, even especially if he gets some pressure from No Parole. Whether he relaxes or not, he obviously slowed down in the San Vicente after going so fast early. But Rosario's going to have his hands full, I think, with him to get into relax once he makes the lead out of there. And, again, we'll know before a quarter of a mile a lot about the Rebel and how it's going to eventually shake out.
Well, and you know, part of this discussion, there's an inside-outside element, too, because you've got other speed, or at least other horses that have, you know, the ability to stay close, most notably Basin. Here's the 3-year-old debut of the Leams Map Colt that won the hopeful, and you certainly got to, you know, wonder how much, you know, development has gone on. You know, Asmussen has brought out his 3-year-old phalanx of competitors in waves so far this winter. And Basin, how aggressive Castellano on for the first time, and string of tighteners getting ready for this. What do we expect from Basin?
Well, I think it's key kind of listening to Asmussen. We've all known him for a number of years, and he is without equal, I think, in the training business. I think that goes without argument. But and I've been around Steve a lot of years. We're not friends. We're not even acquaintances, really. But you do get exposed to him dating way back when I opened up Lone Star, really when he started to hit his stride as a national trainer. And the way he has kind of talked about the way Basin is trained, he's not much for superbly, but or hyperbole, if you will. But I just think he's pretty impressed with the progress Basin has been. Is it a concern that he's starting this late in the 3-year-old year? Yes, it is. But I think maybe Asmussen realizes what he's got. And the way he's kind of praised the work habits of Basin down at the fairgrounds, especially that three-quarter work about 2 or 3 weeks ago, he was most impressed reading between the lines. And Javier didn't come in just to sample the local cuisine. I mean, he took them out, and I think also that speaks volume. And obviously the colt is hugely talented. He has a nice stalking type of running style to fit this group. At least he did show that kind of style in his sprint races. I think he matures. I've not got eyes on him yet. I don't know what he looks like. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Basin runs a monster race tomorrow off the shelf.
Well, and any advance, any development, natural development since September of last year, and this is not a horse that ran in November, December, and is coming back, 75 days later. This is a horse that's had considerable time off, and I'm not mentioning that as a concern. I'm mentioning that as a period of time where a 2-year-old becoming a 3-year-old changes quite a bit. And if he comes back as good as he left after winning the hopeful, which was in the slop, he's a major consideration here. Then you got the two horses that are either going to stalk and close in 3 Technique and Silver Prospector.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to take, kind of a pace scenario, I'd want Silver Prospector in the mix, obviously, as well as 3 Technique, because they are confirmed stalk and pounce type. 3 Technique did not get away very well in the Smarty Jones. I think probably it got used a little bit more than initially what a lot of people thought looking at the replay. And I like Englehart to second start back. He's not well known for getting horses single-digit percentage-wise off the layoff. I think 3 Technique advances some. Very nice half-mile work 2 works ago for him. He worked in company with Wendell Fong. They went a half and 46, a nice move. Wendell Fong did not seriously threaten Whitmore last weekend in the Hot Springs, but he ran a pretty good race for Englehart, again, off the layoff. So look for that one to move forward. As I look for 3 Technique to move forward today, he was within a length and a half of Basin, or length and a quarter, when they met in that maiden special at Saratoga last summer. He has the benefit over Basin with a recent start. If you want to look at things that way, I like 3 Technique tomorrow. I really do, and you can't dismiss Silver Prospector either. He took the big step forward that a 3-year-old has to do this time of year to be competitive. And that 97 buyer number, back, Steve, looms awful large over this group because no one else has done it, and Silver Prospector has, and he's done it recently.
Well, and before we pull it together and wrap up, let's look at that 11th, an important race for those playing multis tomorrow at Oaklawn, and those that are going to play the cross country. And this is a group of fillies going three quarters, Jeff, and Lucky Betty, Cynical Girl, Sacred Union, Tipsy Gal, Girl You Fine, all with experience, and all have run races that are very close to being good enough to graduate. This is a really interesting set of horses.
It is, and you look at this race, and there's a long shot player that's kind of the race you'd love to sink your teeth into, because obviously no one has any wins in this race, but you put together the seconds and the thirds, and they really start to add up. And that's a reluctance to win, and I mentioned it briefly before. I think that is a key in maiden races. You have to get those horses that do show some ability. I wish I knew something on a couple of these first-timers, but I don't. The clockers not really tipping their hand as far as any kind of discussion upstairs. I do know Xanadu comes from historically a pretty nice barn. C.R. Trout doesn't get nearly the kind of respect that he needs to as a horseman. I would look at her if you wanted somebody maybe to crash the gimmicks. She's not been spectacular in the mornings, but she's been steady. And again, a lot of these players tomorrow that are going to get play in that race have run some seconds and thirds, but they really haven't punched through into the win column.
Now, at a glance, I can tell everybody that Mac Robertson's cynical girl, that effort chasing Edgeway, and of course we talked to John Sadler last week and brought up Edgeway and her, you know, her spectacular debut for Costa Aronis. You look outside, Tipsy Gal, she chased Lucky Betty and Quick Decision. Both of them kind of stand out. And then Sacred Union for Hollendorfer, kind of an even debut, a Union Rags filly out of a Wildcat Air mare. This is a really, you're going to have to use a couple of different horses, and of course, dealing with the wet track, another factor, and I don't believe anybody here has any wet track experience. They don't. Tipsy Gal being outside and being by Majestic Perfection and out of a Midnight Loot mare, certainly bred for the wet, and we'll have to do a little of pedigree work on that front and on the other maiden races. There's allowance races as well. Jeff Taylor, any best bets or anything, any one horse you want to mention on anywhere else on the card?
Well, I think today's feature, the Temperance Hill, is kind of an intriguing race. I think Campaign on the outside, he has the proven ability at a mile and a half, but it's unusual that you see a stakes race not only on a weekday here, but a mile and a half this early in the year. That is a really fun race to kind of get your teeth into. Remember, Rita's likely to go favorite in that spot, but I don't know if maybe that be some distance limitations with that favorite there. So, but I like Campaign today quite a bit in the Temperance Hill.
I appreciate it, and I'm glad you mentioned today's stake leading into the big Rebel Day card, and of course it all leads to the Racing Festival of the South and Arkansas Derby Day and more. Jeff Taylor, great to catch up. Good luck tomorrow and today.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure.
Well, that was a great rundown by Steve, and I called him. We went to the bullpen. I just want to mention a couple horses that I looked at in the Azari. I know it's a rerun, but I want you to take a look at My Lady Curlin in there at maybe a little bit of a price for Brad. I like the jock change. Nothing against Gaffney-Ohm, but Rosario comes in to ride, maybe made a little premature move last time against this same group. Maybe be overlooked in the wagering. They all ran together, so I'll take a look at her win type. She's won half her starts. She knows how to get the job done, and she does have a win if it happens to be in the slop a little bit. So I wanted to take a look at her for sure. In the couple notes in the Rebel, Nadal comes in, of course. He's trying two turns for the first time in an interesting play here where Bob Baffert takes the blinkers off of a win where he had the blinkers on his first two times. So whether, you know, he's sort of trying to settle him down a little bit going long for the first time, we don't know. But obviously Bob knows what he's doing. His blinker off, he's done it before. So take a look at that. He's going. The horse on the outside, George Papapodromo, who we liked this horse a lot going into the Breeders' Cup last year. And he told me, he says, you know, we circled the Rebel a while ago, and you know, he's looking to stay for the Arkansas Derby. Hopefully he runs well. And so look for this horse to run a decent race and then move forward off of that. But I agree with Jeff on the three technique deal. Go ahead and watch that replay of that race. It was better than look second. A lot of determination. He did run well in the mud. Luis Diaz is in to ride. And I think that horse deserves a real good shot. So we've got a lot of attention here this weekend. We've got, you know, the TVG crews here with Mike Joyce and Brittany Erton and Barbara Livingston's here shooting photos. And, of course, a lot more eyes are going to be on our own Nancy Holtis here, giving out her tips from inside the paddock and throughout the, I guess, who knows where they're going to be. They can go anywhere. There's not going to be anybody, you know. She's going to have a fascinator on with Sweat, she said. So. But anyway, so, you know, hopefully the racing fans out there take a look at the racing this weekend and enjoy it as a little bit of a distraction. And, Steve, can't thank you a lot. I do want to say
hi to my wife, Gina, and daughter, Lindsay, out there. I wish I was closer to you, but we love you, and we'll see you soon.
Hammer, I appreciate it. We'll all, we'll all bear with it, and wherever this takes us, it takes us. But certainly we'll be involved tomorrow at Oaklawn. From the start to the finish, you've got a really fun day, whether it's the maidens and the stakes and the involvement with the cross-country pick five. We'll talk about that later with Nick Tamaro as well. Hammer, thank you, buddy. Enjoy.
All right. All the best.
Take a quick break and come right back. Mike Battaglia going to join us. And the situation at Turfway, I State Representative Adam Koenig brought up a good point with the winter season coming to an end. This attendance situation kind of robs people of a chance to say goodbye to the building, right? They're going to have a fabulous new building soon enough. Well, we'll talk about that with Mike Battaglia and the Turfway card. Just tremendous. So it's your chance for the last the last big day at Turfway under its post-Latonia era, and with a new era looming. All right, Mike Battaglia next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Want an online tournament that boasts no rake, skim, or takeout with a $10,000 first prize? Here it is. Play ExpressBet Live online Saturday, March 21st. ExpressBet Live is for account holders only, with no registration or other pesky fees. Simply make a live $20 wager on one horse in 10 competition races. Earn the most and collect $10,000. Plus, there's from $1,000 to $4,000 in additional prizes. The top 30 finishers automatically qualify for the $50,000 ExpressBet Showdown. Sweep the card and earn a juicy $5,000 bonus. Don't have an ExpressBet account? Visit ExpressBet.com today and qualify for a $100 bonus. Then register free for ExpressBet Live, the best tournament value going. Play live online with ExpressBet Saturday, March 21st, and it could be your day, but only if you play. Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Public Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.